are listening to a production of the Toll Network, home of biting analysis.
This is Laserknees 19, a kinder, gentler Amu.
I'm Aleph, the thesis-seeking critic, Duat Red.
And I'm Soto, the relieved critic, Duat Green. And it's just us this week.
Yep, the unsupervised children, because that never goes wrong. And never leads to three-hour-long digressions into the nature of a Kamen Rider that certainly we did not just do before we started recording.
No, certainly it was not. Definitely not 3 hours.
That's true. That's true. It was not literally 3 hours.
But we're gonna talk about Zuoger and all these kids. We're gonna talk about episode 23, Mega Beast Hunter. Our writer was, again, Komura Junko. Our director was Takemoto Noboru. I'm, at this point, completely baffled by Komura Junko as a writer.
That's legit, just though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I went back and I looked at his credits again, and I think this is the first time he's ever led a project, which may be the problem.
That would explain a bit, because it is, again, tonal whiplash all over the place. Perfectly competent episode writer, but boy, the meta structure is kind of,
First time he's led a project, as far as I can tell, the largest amount of things he did was on Wizard, which was like 22, 23 episodes, and then...
Was he the guy who they brought in to do all the Beast episodes? Have we already had this conversation? We might have done.
I didn't look at exactly what episodes he did, but I mean, other than that, it was somewhere between like 4 and 15 episodes, usually less than 10. So I think just this being his first time leading a project is kind of where all of the weirdness and inconsistency comes from. I think maybe he's just not used to it, and you know, not used to having someone there to correct him on how a thing is supposed to be written.
Yeah, editors. Editors are very important. They never get enough love, but they are so necessary.
But let's jump into this.
Let's do. So let's have your overall thoughts about the episode and its message from your animal instincts.
This episode is exactly what I was talking about last week. This is what I want out of an episode about Amu. It's not as much as I want, because Amu was basically the B-plot of this episode, but it's still a lot... We've still gotten a lot more out of the others. Like, we didn't even get a flashback to Amu and her mom, where, like, we've gotten that in... And everyone else is, like, talking about their personal lives.
Yeah, we never got to see her cat mom, and if her cat mom, I don't know, has like an adorable like 50s housewife bob or something. Look, I'm just all about the animal, the furry heads with like the human, you know, signifiers. Again, Sela's dad is a shark who has a mustache. That's amazing.
But like, I want to see Amu's mom. I'm sure she's adorable.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She raised Amu.
Amu's the cutest. But, I mean, at least this episode showed a lot more of the really kind of great things about Amu, for once, and, like, highlighted them. But it also kind of really brings out the inconsistency in how she's written, to the point where Yamato's even like, man, I thought you would've, you know, wanted this kid to go behind his back. Like, behind his mom's back. But, I mean, like, this is the Amu episode that I want to see. Like, this is the Amu that I want in Amu episodes. And man, Zuoger is handling family stuff a lot better than Ghost. I mean, Zuoger is working with generally much more stable family relationships, but, you know, isn't that always the case between Rider and Sentai? It's just a lot less uncomfortable watching this kid where, like, I don't get to see my mom all that often, and I may have broken my leg, but I can tough it out to hang out with my mom. That's adorable.
Really,
not a thing you should do, but, I mean, your heart's in the right place.
No, no.
I really love that Amu is the one who sits this kid down and is like, listen, you are badly hurt, and if you hide this stuff from your mom, she's gonna eventually find out, and then she'll only worry more. Because, like, it's really understandable that this is the one time this kid gets to spend with his really busy mom. And he doesn't want to miss out on that. And, like, I get that. And I think that's a thing a lot of kids watching can probably relate to, especially if they have, like, both of their parents work, their like, they live with a single parent who maybe has to work nights, or even works during the day and they don't get to see them until the evening, but then, like, that's only maybe a couple of hours before they go to bed. Like, I get that, but his leg looked pretty dang broken, and that's not a thing you can pretend isn't there. Like, he couldn't move it while he was walking.
Yeah, no, and when he, like, stepped on it, he just defaulted like a
I think this is a pretty good thing to have Amu saying to kids, like, look, don't push yourself harder than you need to. You can make things work.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm not going to argue with any of that, and I think the only, like, difference I would bring, or nuance, because really, I don't think we, on this one, we disagree too much. I think my big thing is, like, it's just a shame that Amu has to share so much of this episode where we find out so much more about her, which, look, that is a relative statement. Like, it is exponential. But she has to share that with the new villain guy, who I kind of really like. Because, like, look, I like this new bad guy. I like the weird pirate versus legitimate kind of American-coded Navy. Like, because the sailor suit, I feel like that's pretty much an American uniform, right? I don't actually know what international Navy uniforms look like, so I'm not gonna... Anyway, it just kind of felt out of joint with the Amu stuff. And, like, look, like you said, like, I really like this Amu over last episode's. And like, while that's not the highest of praise, because I really did not like last episode's Amu, at least we got that point of view stuff and perspective on her that's interesting. The bit where she's like, look, me and my mom, we go hard. And if we go too hard, we trust other people to pull us back because we love each other, but we can't be there for each other in that way. And I'm like, that's kind of beautiful and really, like you were saying, very a necessary thing for a lot of people. Not just kids. Like, you know, look, you need to recognize that maybe you need to, you know, ask for help when it comes to social situations, people. Like, I feel like most of the internet could use. Yeah. That. Anyway, which, okay, like, now that I think about it, does kind of fit into, like, Yamato having his reassertion of the interconnected nature of people and animals in the world, but it's just kind of a shame that Yamato got to do the big, like, no, I'm asserting my identity in the face of horrific violence, you know, moments when, like, it'd be cool as heck if Amu ran off to catch the pirate alien robot shark pilot guy. What's his name again? He had a weird name. I kept thinking it was really
Bungley.
Yeah, Bungley. Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's just that, like, I am old enough to have grown up with Beavis and Butthead, and I'm just like, Bungle.
Oh my God, maybe that's.
I am the fake Cornelio. It's look like
his name feels weird to me.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's it. Like, it's just like some sort of weird bunghole reference. You should probably cut this out, but it's just like, that's where I'm going with it. And like, I'm really showing my age. That's fine.
We still make that joke in my house.
Oh, good. Okay, I don't feel quite so bad.
Oh, no, we were, like, my parents were, like, 80s rock and roll people.
Well, yeah. They're like, those are my people on TV. Those garbage teenagers. Excellent. Well, look, I mean, there was a time when like, garbage teenagers just going out and being garbage people was fine. And then the internet happened.
Yeah. And then, like, actual garbage. Because, like, there were always garbage people, but I don't think people had as wide of a forum to openly be garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could have, and Beavis and Butthead, like, the camera always viewed them as, look at these two jerks.
Yep. They've ruined
To put it in a way that I'm not going to have to censor later.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like, just like,
look at these two terrible people being awful.
And we're just going to keep hoping they die. Maybe this will be the one that does it. And it never was.
No, it wasn't.
But that was the first place I heard Swedish techno-pop country sensation Rednex's Cotton Eye Joe. So, you know. It wasn't a complete loss. Anyway, speaking of garbage people and toolboxes, what got your hackles up this episode?
Even though this kid, like, broke his leg, I'm not sure why him and his mom can't still go see the fireworks. Like, he's already treated and has crutches and, like, is leaving the hospital. I mean, maybe the viewing spot is just too far from where they live for him to walk with a broken leg, and they don't have a car, because I know a lot of people in Japan just rely on public transportation because having a car is kind of a pain in the butt.
Well, and, you know, it's, if you've got public transportation, it's worth a dang.
Yeah. Like, a lot of people in Japan just don't have cars because their public transportation is reliable.
Yeah.
And goes a lot of places.
Yeah. This is certainly not at all to Americans looking at, well, I'm looking at the memory of mine back home and just going like, yeah, what must that be like, glare?
Oh, I've spent years and years glaring in the direction of NJ Transit because they're the worst. But it just, it seems odd that they can't find a way to make it work somehow.
Yeah, I think, like, the only thing I could think of was that, like, mom had to leave work early to go pick him up, and that means she has to pick up the night shift so they can pay rent, because the legend of the rent is way hardcore.
I get that reference, too. Like, maybe it's that, I just wish they'd kind of made some kind of comment as to why this couldn't happen. It's just like, oops, now we're just... Like, I like that the response was, look, I will make a way for us to spend time together as soon as possible. Like, I will make sure that happens, but I don't understand why it's just, there's nothing that indicated they couldn't still actually go to the fireworks.
Yeah, like, this show is weird when it comes to, like, they raise these weird family issues, and the moral is always, hey, kid, suck it up. Which is, it's weird how often that's the moral in these things lately. I'm just, there's definitely some stuff to be said about, like, the current economic state. Anyway, like it's like with the brother who was committing all those crimes for his sister, and we had our long discussion of, well, is it, like, it's theft, but is it wrong? And we just, like, oh, no, he left to go and work some more so maybe his sister won't die in the hospital of a perfectly preventable disease. Huh, that's a weird place to end it. And this one's just like, well, he didn't get to see them fireworks. Mom couldn't make it work, and there was nothing we could have done to help. I'm like, guys, come on, you're superheroes. Come on now.
Like, there's probably several ways you could have made this work. Like, go make Leo do her shift.
Yeah, only Leo, because, well, no, don't let, actually, he...
Actually, it depends on where she works.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, if there's more than one woman who works there, like, that's a, I know they don't do lawsuits, but that's just going to be another terrible time for all of mom's friends.
Yeah, well, still. I'd be fine with Leo missing the fireworks.
Yeah, I'm
like,
okay.
I don't want to make any of the rest of them miss it.
Yeah, no.
But, like, there's...
Misa was so excited.
I know. And also, speaking of Misao, I'm not saying Sela did this intentionally, because again, it seems really unlike her, and I'm still not totally sure she's aware of what Amu was doing last week. But, you know, when they, you know, Cruiser turns giant, and everyone's like, okay, Misao, we're gonna handle this, you go fight him. Sela runs over and, like, grabs his arm and tells him he's the only one who can protect the town. And why are we reinforcing the grossness from last week? Like, don't do that. Like, you're just starting to repair the damage you did to Amu. Please don't keep going with that.
I think, like, the best way you can take it is just, like, she doesn't realize that that's what's going on, and it's just, hey, you've got a robot that can be piloted on its own, so you get out there and do that thing, we'll do this thing.
Yeah, I just, it's like, only you can do this, and I'm touching you. And
yeah.
That was the entire plot of last week, and it's like, please.
Look, no. I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just like, this is the best. Best possible way to take it, even though, yeah, you ain't wrong.
And, like, it's I'm fine with him going and doing it while everyone else fights someone else. Like, that's not even an issue.
Yeah,
it's
no,
just,
yeah.
Why that grossness?
Yeah, if you just would have had Tusk, like, grab his arm, it's like, hey, could you do the thing? You've got the robot.
It's like, hey, man, we're friends. Go do the thing.
Yeah. Hey, remember the power of friendship between two awkward guys? That. Look, I'm still sad I wasn't on that episode, but, you know, I had stuff, but...
Stuff happens.
That was beautiful. That's still one of my favorite lines in probably most of Sentai.
And you know, as much as I do like the fireworks scene at the end, I wish Yamato hadn't kind of, like, backed off on trying to get Misao to actually go over and watch it with them. Like, I know he does get up and, like, watch some of it anyway, but he still does it completely separated from the group, and I feel really bad because he was so excited about going with friends.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing is I feel like the show is kind of supporting this the Leo idea, which is to say the garbage person idea, that we should get tired of a dude who just got out of this really messed up place like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and bullied kid gets kidnapped, tortured, and has the essence of three furries shoved into him without his say-so, giving him superpowers, which he gained at the expense of those innocent lives, after being told it was basically happening because he didn't like being weak. Like, that is decades of therapy with like a really good therapist to get that stuff untangled. So for the show to be like, God, why won't he just get over it? And I'm like, you're the guys who wrote him that way. Why are you upset? But on the upside, like his Herman's Head crew didn't go all like waifu and junk again. So that was nice.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't there at all. Which
that's a shame.
A little sad, but I mean, he wasn't really the focus of the episode at all, so I can kind of let that one be.
Yeah, well, look, again, I'm just glad it wasn't like, you know, the wolf didn't, like, pop in at the bit you were mentioning and just be like, yeah, it's Sella, she likes us, bro, and like, no, I'm glad that didn't happen, is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, let's just at least not reinforce that also.
Yeah, and just sort of to get back to what you were saying, like, it would have been kind of nice if like, at the end of during the fireworks thing, they would have at least brought the kid along and be like, you know, Amu just being like, hey, I know your mom isn't here. I'll be your big sister for the night. Let's watch the friggin' fireworks. Let's go. We'll cart you over because Tusk here, he's an elephant and has the carrying capacity of a creature like 10 times his size. It's fine. Just don't fart. He'll die. Sorry, I shouldn't tell fart jokes, but like, anyway, my last thing is in the hackles up vein is this, you know, the B plot that we have with Amu and the kid and the fireworks would have been great for Amu's focus episode last week, because even if I can be argued by myself no less into seeing a connection between Amu's deal and the intro of the new baddie and whatnot, like, it'd be way more elegant if the show focused on Amu helping out this kid and his mom and using her, look, this is what gets me and mine into trouble, so don't do that experience, and then have a whole episode for alien pirate guy. Like, it would work better, and also we would have been able to avoid that whole thing with the Herman's Head crew just being like, pretty girl, touch hand, like. Like, come on, guys. You know.
Yeah, no, I would love to just erase the entirety of the last episode from existence and just have Amu's plot this episode be the entire last episode. Because, man, there's an episode of Ghost Age that is entirely about Eri making cake. And it was great. It's one of my favorite episodes.
So,
like, why can't Amu just, like, okay, well, let's see if we can figure out a way to help your mom so she can still go to this.
Like, that would be a great episode.
And, like, even if in the end they can't, like, just like you said, just have him with them and, like, have him filming the fireworks for his mom.
Exactly. Then, you know, we'll go home, we'll watch it together, and that'll be fun, but I still get to go out and see them because mom, you know, then mom has a little speech to Amu, like, you know, I want to take him out nice places, but I can't because I have to keep a roof over our heads. Because, again, the Legend of the Rent is way hardcore. Like, it's a fun ha-ha way to put it, but Rent is no joke.
Yeah.
But
believe me, I am
glad
Rent is not one of my concerns.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those things where I got into a discussion earlier this week, like, Aleph, how can you just straight up ignore a bunch of stuff that is established as fact in the show? And I'm like, stuff like that last episode with Amu, that's how and why.
It's really easy to ignore stuff established in the show if it's bad.
Yeah, or if it doesn't work for you. It's sometimes it's just necessary, because, boy, a lot of anime, real gross, you know, the fan service starts, and it's like, aha, okay, you put up the filter you can.
Yep.
Look,
that's, if I had to refuse every problematic piece of media, I would never get to enjoy anything.
Well, because, I mean, you know, they're... there is nothing that's unproblematic, because, you know, we live in a society that is filled with a lot of really awful assumptions about how things should be, like, just kind of terrible. This side of evil, most of sometimes, at its most benign, it's this side of evil. The rest of the time, like, no, it's Shocker. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff that just has some bits that are not so much.
Yep, and then it's never a thing of like, well, you have to look past it. It's like, no, look, if you can't look past it, you can't look past it. I get it. There's things that are exactly up my alley that contain stuff I can't get past and I don't want to risk seeing again, which sucks because, you know, okay, the one was Symphogears, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, I have not got any further because there's just some bits that I'm just like, nope, too much. And that sucks because it's about magical girls who use their fists to beat up monsters made of rock and roll while singing. Like,
yeah,
y'all don't even know how much that is. That is like the nexus of eight things I am all about.
I mean, that's why I suggested it, but I totally understand.
Yeah, exactly. And this
like,
is...
if there are some parts where it's just like, nope, yeah. Never mind.
Yep, you know, because after a certain point, it's the deal breaker. It's like, nope, nah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, my threshold is just so... I'm not sure if high or low is correct. Whichever one means that I can tolerate it a lot. Because I've just been in this game for so long.
Yeah.
I've been in magical girl hell my entire life. So it's just like, oh, this again. Okay, it'll be over in a second. Just look away.
Yep. And like, again, and that's no further, just so I am not misunderstood. Because, again, we are just souls whose intentions are good.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, please don't let us be misunderstood. Like, that's not me saying, if you can't enjoy it, you're bad or whatever. It's just like...
Yeah, no, it's just we've all...
Everyone's got their level.
I was talking with Pocky Squirrel on Twitter earlier today.
Hi, Pocky Squirrel. I don't actually know them, but...
I'm not sure if she listens to us, but I talk with her on Twitter a lot about things. And we were just in a conversation about shipping. She had brought something up, you know, about age range. And how if it's not too drastic, as long as there isn't, like, an imbalance of power at the core of it, she can kind of move past the age gap, as long as it's not, like, horribly drastic.
Mm.
Which, I mean, wasn't explicitly said, but I kind of, it's implied in there, because the age range that she was talking about was only, like, 5 or 6 years, and it was people, like, late teens and early 20s. Which is a real weird nebulous thing, and I'm like, yeah, no, everyone's got a bit of a different threshold for that kind of area with an age range, and I mean, as long as, you know, it becomes more about, like, the balance of power between the characters. And even on that level, everyone's threshold is different. You gotta just, as long as no one's hurting anyone else.
That's kind of it. Like, and it's a thing where, like, even the really kind of, like, weird, gross, like, stuff where I'm just like, I hear about it, I'm like, no. Like, it's still one of those things where it's like, okay, I at least understand the purpose this serves for people, kind of, maybe, sort of, on a theoretical basis. You know, I'm glad y'all are having fun. You have it over there. Don't talk to me about it. I don't want to hear. But lest we get into fandom hell even more than we kind of are.
That is a place to be.
Yeah. Let us turn the tide with some tide turners. Ah.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, that was really, yeah, it was subtle. Subtle. Like a brick. All right, start us off. Let's go.
Misao being really excited about seeing fireworks with his new friends was so cute.
It really was.
And I love how excited everyone else got in response. Like, learning about, like, oh, well, is this what, like, here, is this what you wear to this sort of thing? And it's like, oh, yours looks really good, and now we all want one. Like, even Leo wasn't being a weird pain in the butt about it for once.
Yeah, for once.
Like, the whole group was giving him some nice, positive attention and didn't do anything to make him feel bad, and it made me happy because I worry about this child.
Yeah, it's a welcome change.
And speaking of clothes, does Sela have an apron with a little shark on it? Because holy heck, I think Sela has a little apron with a tiny shark on it. And like, it's not even a really girly apron, it's just, it's like, just a blue apron, and I think on the chest there's just a shark. Like, a silhouette of a shark, and I'm like, that's amazing.
That's pretty good, I like that. I had not noticed, but that...
Like, I just barely caught it, so I'm not even entirely sure that's what it is, but there's something on the chest, and it's like a light blue apron, and whatever's there is dark blue and kind of elongated. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure she's wearing an apron with a shark on it, and that's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. I really like the things we learned about Amu this week, and the impact that it has on, like, her behavior thus far. Like, Amu lives with her single mom, or at least, you know, in a situation where her dad is not present enough for Amu to think anything other of, like, nope, at home, it's just me and my mom.
Well, that is cats, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, she's learned to let others help her without putting up any resistance so that her mom never worries about her. And, you know, if she's having trouble, and, like, her mom's not worrying if she's having trouble and just not saying anything. And, I mean, I guess I kind of relate, because most of my life it's just been me living with my mom. I mean, my dad is present in my life. There's nothing, no hard feelings between anyone. It's just I live with my mother, and my parents are not together. But, you know, there's been trouble here and there. And there have been things about it that we've kept from each other, and in the end, that's made things a lot worse.
Yeah.
And a lot more complicated, and I think a lot of things could have been solved a lot sooner if, you know, everything had been out in the open.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, communication, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was maybe a bit young, and that's why Mom didn't tell me about the thing I'm thinking of specifically, but, you know, I found out, and it made things real complicated.
You know, and that's, yeah, again, that's why I think I'm really happy this show is talking so much about communication. Not
yeah.
always great about it, but when this show sings, it sings.
And, you know, I really like it being the groundwork for Amu relating to Yamato and his feelings about everyone being connected, because, like, at her core, she understands, like, the idea of needing help and, you know, accepting help, be it for herself or other people. She's like, yeah, no, I we're all connected, so we all help each other. That's pretty much how my life goes. Naria was wrecking
yes.
folks this episode. I mean, yeah, I'm sure they were tired from fighting this new guy all day, but she just walked in and just shot them off their feet repeatedly and did not care. Like, in the middle of a conversation, just,
yeah.
Hey guy, you like killing stuff? I want to invite you to kill a bunch of stuff for us. Here, let me show you. I'll just kill these guys. And, like, she walks in, they're like, oh god, it's Naria. Like,
which is the appropriate
six
reaction.
Of them. All six of them are scared of Naria, which is great, because they are definitely not scared of anyone else on, up in the spaceship. Except Misao, who's probably still, you know, understandably scared of Gina.
Yeah, well, I mean, look.
But,
yeah.
Okay, I'm fine with him, you know, still being scared of Gina, because, you know, that's his circumstances, but they are all terrified of Naria.
Oh, yeah, here's just a quick point I was gonna make later, but you brought up Naria. She has the coolest
yeah.
weapons.
Yeah,
probably ever in Sentai. She has gunchucks. She has nunchucks, which, by the way, the coolest weapon. And then she put guns in them. So that when she is beating you up, she can shoot your friends. And then, so she can just sort of fold them up, so it's just sort of the passive mode. Yeah, she can still shoot you while she's still talking with the dude, because that was the best thing. He's just like, oh yeah, no, we're gonna take you up to the ship. You can come hang out, and we'll just, you can murder people with us. I know you already like murdering people. We like murdering people. Bang, bang, bang. So what do you say? It's like, not even, she didn't even look at him.
No, she's like, oh, I can hear them getting up. No, not, I don't want that yet. You all stay down. Who had nunchucks and Geki Ranger? Was it Geki Red? I'm almost positive one of them had nunchucks. I think it might have been him before he got,
maybe?
Like,
I know
the swords from the shark dude.
The robot had, like, the three-part staff
thing. But I might be
thing.
Wrong about that. Maybe that was just their, like, base weapon. I don't know. It's been a long time, and I don't remember. But speaking of that spaceship, have we mentioned that Sagittarra Arc is a great name?
Yeah, like, if you didn't say it, I was gonna.
The ship itself is the dumbest thing, but man. Naria said that, and I'm like, oh, okay, I can forgive this entire ship if that's what you're calling it.
Basically the same feeling here, because that is an awful design. It's terrible. But yeah, the Sagittarii arc, top notch. I hope like whoever was like, okay, well, this is the toy we've made for the ship. Or I don't know if they make a toy for the ship, but, you know, this is the design we've got for the ship. What do we call it? I don't know. It's an arrow, so it's in the space, so Sagittarii arc. And then just everyone high-fived and just went for lunch. That's good. Sagittarii arc. I like it.
My one issue with the fireworks scene aside, I do think the whole thing is really cute. Just, you know, how happy everyone was. They're all excited. And I thought Yamato at least filming it to show to Ryo and his mom, since they couldn't go. And, you know, to also show it to Misao since he's refusing to watch it, that was sweet. Yamato's a good kid. He's trying.
He is. Like, it's nice to have a really, like, chill, down-to-earth Red for the first time in what feels
since
like ages.
Since Gosager?
Yeah, probably.
I think Alita might have been the last one.
Everyone else has felt pretty hot-blooded.
Yeah, I mean, Wright wasn't hot-blooded, kind of on the same level. Hiromu and Wright were a little different, but they were definitely still the, like, tough guy, let's go, like, fight the bad guys, Red.
Yeah, exactly. And Yamato just consistently gives off, like, well, I mean, I don't really, I can help, so I can't not, but,
I'll fight the bad guys, because they're causing problems, but, you know, I'm gonna, you know, worry about other things in the in-between.
Yeah, it's really, I like that kid. But mostly, what I liked this episode was that pirate dude's design.
Yeah, he was reminding me of, like, Pirates of the Caribbean, Davy Jones.
Oh, yeah, I can totally see that, but I think a lot of what I like is that how it is clearly going to evoke pirate without making it exactly like 100% Gokaiger explicit. His head is shaped like a pirate hat, but it's not actually a pirate hat. Tentacle beard is made of tubes, so it, you know, it evokes a beard, but is not literally a beard. He's got a hook claw for a hand, but it's not exactly a hook, you know, stuff like that. That and I have a certain fourth wall breaking weakness for whenever they find in-story reasons to bring back previous killed monsters, because look, I get that they're on a budget, and I think when they can make it work, it's actually quite clever.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and I mean, like, this dude's weapon is a freaking anchor.
Okay, well, yeah, but it's an anchor axe.
Yes,
cool.
And I mean, we are in an anniversary series, so I mean, and they're doing this kind of the Bokenger way, where they're designing things kind of based on previous monsters, so he's clearly just trying to evoke Gokaiger.
Well, he's doing a good job, because I was like, I was watching that, I was like, okay, so is this guy Gokaiger? Because this is an anniversary series. Are all the villains based on? I don't think that works, but anyway, but yeah, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I was looking it up, and I mean, you know, always take, like, Rider Wiki and Sentai Wiki with a grain of salt, because they are not the best.
Well, you know, it's that's the thing with Wiki. I mean, it's anyone can do it.
Especially a fan wiki, and not, like,
yeah,
the actual Wikipedia. But, you know, I was looking to see if just there was any, because in things like that, they can kind of sometimes confirm those design things. And I found something that said his design bears resemblance to Bachus Gil from GoBusters vs. Gokaiger, as well as Darius Sueger? That's a lot of letters that I don't really know how to say from Gokaiger. He was one of the dudes that the main bad guy's dad sent to help him toward the end.
Yeah. I can kind of see it anyway. The Bacchus Gill, I can see a lot more, though.
They're all very pointy and blue.
Yeah, and piratey. Well, okay, the second guy isn't piratey, but the Bacchus Gill is hella piratey.
Yeah, so, like, I can see that, and, like, it's, well, I mean, again, both things are Gokaiger, and that's definitely what they're trying to evoke.
Yeah, I mean, they did that 100%. That's a real good observation on their part, and good on you for finding it, because I never look at the wikis unless I'm like, who wrote this?
Yeah, that's normally what I check them for.
And sometimes they're not great about saying so, which is always
fun. No, finding episode producers can be a little tricky.
Yeah, I believe that. I've just been watching so much GoGo 5 that I'm just like, huh, well, who wrote this? There's not a lot of information on that. Darn.
Yeah, but I know, having gone through, like, Bokenger stuff, they give, because they did the same thing, because they were not as explicitly an anniversary series the way Gokaiger was, but they did the same sort of design thing, and I know I've seen a lot of, like, oh, well, this is evoking, like, this monster or this mecha from said previous show, so I thought, you know, maybe they'd have that here, and that's what I came up with.
Speaking of designs, that reminds me. The pirate dude's ship, I think, totally is going to transform. You just know it. I looked at design, and I'm like, no, that's a foldy guy.
Yep.
I have enough Transformers. I know the look. Also, as we've both said already, like, I really like the way they wrote Amu this episode. Like, yeah. She's still got that streak of self-interest, but now it feels like it's being tempered as because now it's being portrayed as a survival mechanism, because her and her mom just, again, they have limited resources and have to ask for help in a really, like, explicit or just assume it's going to happen way. And I, you know, I like that. That's kind of their way of doing for each other.
I think it just makes a lot more sense with how she approaches, like, Yamato and like, his assistance to the group. It's like, oh, okay, well, you'll let us stay here? Okay, well, then I'm going to stay here, and I'm just going to make myself comfortable, because I'm
used
to taking help
from people. You'll let me know when it's too much.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, if someone needs help, they'll call me and let me know, because when I need help, I tell people.
Yeah, I mean, she's refreshingly honest, but also kind of behavior blind, which is a really interesting combination. Okay, I think I realized the thing. Now I've understood why what I like about Amu. She's probably one of the very few female characters you see really ever who is allowed to be both not kind of behavior blind, like socially so, and is never demonized for it. Like, Yamato doesn't quite understand where she's coming from, but it never gets down to like, oh, girls, teenage girls, you're all like terrible.
Yeah, and like,
it's just like,
and he does get upset with her, but it's just,
but it's just like,
you're doing a thing that's rude. It's not like you're a girl and you're doing a bad thing because that's what girls do. It's just like, Amu, just, I know you're better than this, stop it.
Yeah, which, like, look, so often, at least in a lot of the again, problematic media I've seen, like, anytime a girl is rude, it's because she's evil and conniving, and she's that head cheerleader I always wanted to date, and she would never give me the time of day, and it felt like she was gonna laugh at me if I asked her out, so I never asked her out, and that's how that stuff always gets written.
Yep.
But for Amu, she's just like, oh, I didn't realize this was a problem. My bad. And then it's done. I'm just like, she's great. I love her. Okay, the other thing is that, the other thing I liked is that Genesis's weird extra jadedness is kind of charming to me, because, like, he's not just this vile, sadistic pile of garbage. He's a vile, sadistic pile of garbage who has focused on a victim and is like, oh, he's not, I can't, the guy I want to hurt isn't here, though. This is all ringing really hollow. And I'm just like, wait, is Misao Genesis's weird alien sadistic monster equivalent of being like a middle-aged dude buying a sports car? Is this whole show, is the whole blood game Genesis's midlife crisis? Like, he's just like, man, I used to play the blood game. Now I just watch other people play the blood game. Oh, my life is so hard. Because, like, otherwise it doesn't make any sense, because why is he bored? Because it's the kind of bored he's doing is the bored of, like, Alexander weeping because there were no more worlds to conquer. I'm like, dude, you have not won. You have not won once. Every time you thought you won, you lost. Why are you bored? You should be like, yes, these guys are so good at fighting. I'm going to look forward to crushing them. But he's not. He's just like, all right, Azul Qubar, you just you murder a bunch of people. You cause untold havoc for the cruelest of reasons. You all be the supervillain versions of Johnny Cash's character who killed a man in Reno just to watch him die. And I'm just going to be over here being sad. I'm like, it's somehow charming because he's sad that he's lost his literal target of abuse. Like, if I'm being 100% like explicit about the subtext they're working here. Like, he's an abuser who's really sad that he has no one to abuse, and I'm like, that is actually a character trait. Good on you guys for writing him one.
Yeah, and, like, it's real interesting, because when he had Misao was the only time he's ever really shown emotion.
The only time
he's ever really gotten excited.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, I'm playing the blood game now, and I'm doing it by wrecking a dude's soul. That is double the murder, double the blood game, let's do this. And now he's just like, yeah, sure, yeah, untold destruction, random bombardment in a country where, I'm sure just like on a cultural history level, it's like, yeah, people dressed in American military accoutrement just randomly bombing civilian areas is probably, like, basically one of the most horrible things you can imagine, because...
Yeah.
not trying... Again, I'm not... I try to be very sensitive, but it's one of those things where it's like, it begs comment. It does.
A little bit.
But yeah, other than that, it's just like, I really like Narya this episode, but we kind of already went into that. Again, gunchucks. I just really hope that there's some sort of, like, the armor she's wearing isn't there to protect her. It's to hold her back. It's to protect us from her. her. Like, I want something like that in there. Because she's got attitude, dry wit, great managerial skills, a killer instinct, and again, the coolest weapons. Like, she really should be running stuff, I'm just saying.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, it's only that her, like, driving goal in the series is help Genis. And I'm like, well, why does she want to do that? Dumb, he's boring and, like, mercurial. This is, like, if they were married and this was some, like, Venture Brothers, the Monarch, and Dr. Mrs. the Monarch, a.k.a. Dr. Mrs. the Monarch, a.k.a. the Sovereign. Like, it'd be interesting because, like, hyper-competent woman, petulant child man. Like, at least then I'd understand why they stayed, because she could have, like, some speech about, like, no, look, he's so evil. I just like making evil technology, but I never really, I don't really want to be evil. I want to be smart. He's really evil. I like helping him be evil. He gives me things to do with my smarts. I don't know. I'm just sort of babbling.
I mean, that's kind of what I was hoping for in Tokyo-Jir.
With who?
With Nero and Noir.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I could see that. It took me a sec.
I spent a lot of time before that show started thinking they were married, because they look like they would be.
I could see that, and like, Greta does kind of look like the weird monster child they would have.
Yeah.
I could see it, yeah.
And then that ended up not being the thing, and I'm like, okay, but they still have some really interesting tension, and then they have that actual physical fight that we don't get to see.
Which is such a shame.
Yeah, the whole Nero and Noir thing is like my only huge complaint about Tokyo-Jir. Like, it's my only real disappointment.
That's fair.
Because I think there's a real interesting story there that didn't get told.
At least I'll give this one as a counterpoint. Not really a counterpoint, just, you know, additional perspective. At least it was good enough that you were like, there's more here. And I'm always happy when I can watch a thing and I'm like, oh, there's more, you know, this universe feels deeper to me.
Yeah, the problem is that I just didn't care about Zed.
I've basically had a crush on David Bowie since before I quite had words for it. So this really attractive dude basically being a self-destructive rock star Jareth the Goblin King.
Like, I didn't dislike Zed, it's just I thought everyone around him was more interesting than he was.
I was like, again, I'm a sucker for really self-destructive villains. I think it's really great.
I mean, it's like, he had some real interesting stuff going on. I feel like he was introduced way too soon, and that he ran out of stuff to do.
We have gone back and forth on this, and again, this is not like, you are wrong, this is me respectfully disagreeing.
It's like, and, I mean, we disagree about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so for the amount of, to which we're like, yeah, I know, and, but.
But we have our handful of things. I think Zed could have been done better.
Okay, I can get with that, because, look, that's a statement I can never argue with, because, yeah, you can always do better.
I really didn't like Mork. And, like, once Mork came in, I'm like, I'm completely disinterested in, like, everything going on with the villains at this point. You have run out of stuff to do with them. Like, between here and the finale, you've run out of stuff to do. Zed has one more thing to do, and it's not time to do it yet. So you have to bring in her.
I could see that complaint. I thought of her more of as, like, to explain why he is the way he is. But
the thing is, she only did that for, like, one episode.
Yeah, then.
And then it's like, okay, but now you're here for another, like, 20 episodes.
That's legit. Again, it's like with Forza, like, I'm always happy when people can point out points of criticism, because it pulls the scales from my eyes, because look, when I really like a thing, I like it sometimes a little too much, to the point where I forget to criticize it, which,
Oh, believe me, I can also be there.
We're all that way, I would hope.
But, and I mean, like, I'm still not over episode 46 of Forza. I'm still angry this many years later.
Oh, no,
That's another thing that I like to pretend didn't happen.
And, you know, look, I'm a big fan of just, like, you know what? No. Again, I got in that fight just like Aelith, all of the Phase 2 Heisei writers are explicitly connected in the text. I don't care. No, they're not. They are all separate, distinct universes, separate, distinct stories. The only time crossovers happen is fan fiction. All of the crossovers are fan fiction. They don't actually count. And then they'll probably want to say, what about Rider 1? And I'll be like, that one counts because that one actually ties thematically into what Takaru is doing.
Yeah.
Also, Takaru is the ghost of Rider after Gaim killed Rider and Drive took his place.
I mean, I don't even, like, concretely believe that everything post-Decade is set in the same universe. I just like some of the implications that would be true if it were. I'm like, I could totally see how a lot of these wouldn't be, because certain things don't make sense if they are.
Yeah.
Certain things make absolutely zero sense if all of these writers are connected.
Yeah, and that's why I just get to, I don't believe they're all connected. I'm a big fan of fan fiction in which they are.
Yeah, it's like, I love a lot of the implications that come from them being connected. But, you know, the actual source text doesn't totally support that.
Yeah, but anyway, before we get going off on this again, speaking of all our reflexive, speaking of our evolving opinions on things, we're going to get into our evolutions, which is to say, what do you think this show has in store for us in future episodes?
We're getting a mom episode. It's going to rip my heart directly out of my chest, stomp it into the dirt.
Yeah, I think that's, judging from the preview, I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yep.
But, like, I will say this, like, I'm just really looking forward to a main protagonist, and look, I know that Reds are supposed to be parts of the team, and they're just equal as everyone else, but let's be real here.
They're the protagonist.
Yeah. I'm just happy to see a protagonist having a mom that we talk about and at some point talk to, because, like, look, I've watched a fairly decent chunk of recent Toei Kids stuff in the past, like, since I jumped in, like, 3 years ago, like, I mainlined most of Heisei Rider, a fairly sized chunk of Sentai. There have not been a lot of moms on screen or mentions of them.
There are more in Sentai than Rider.
Oh, okay, that's good.
There's a good five straight years of moms in the mid-2000s.
Nice.
Six, from Abba Ranger all the way through Gekki Ranger. There's five straight years of moms.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. But
no one is actually Deca Ranger. Probably shouldn't count. I count Swan as everyone's mom because she essentially adopted Jasmine. Her and Doggy pretty much adopted Jasmine. Her parents basically disowned her, and Doggy took her in.
Now wait, when they disowned her, was it because Jasmine is an Esper?
Yes.
Sorry. It's just, anytime Deca Ranger comes up, I have to.
Look, someone has to. If Jasmine's mentioned in a conversation, someone has to do it.
Yeah, it's just, it's the law of Jasmine, who, again, is an Esper.
Like, I'll count Swan at least for that, but she is basically everyone's mom. But,
Abba Ranger,
nice. I guess Abba Ranger's kind of tenuous because she technically does not have the child until the end of the show, but also the child is the main villain.
Well, that is a mother connection. Look, it's just a mother being in it, connected to a main character. Like, it is not common.
It's not a thing we do in Rider.
Yeah.
Nearly ever, except Double.
Yeah, like Double and the one before that I can think of that's even close is in Kabuto.
Oh wait, Kiva.
And that's a grandmother.
Kiva.
Oh,
that's
right, Kiva.
That's the actual plot.
Yeah, right. Okay, so two instances of actual mothers, one instance of a grandmother.
Who doesn't, well, in...
Never show up.
In Decade, she does.
Yeah. She's kind of amazing.
Yeah, she is. Tsukasa,
shut up, sit down, just listen to me.
Yeah, I really don't think that, aside from Kiva, like, Ryotaro had no parents. Well, Iri.
Yeah, that's Big Sister. Like, she was forced...
Well, not to Ryotaro. To Hana.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, okay.
But really, that's not a point, like, that's not a thing in the show. Like, she's never acting as a mom to Hana, and it's not a thing we know until, like, the last three episodes.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much that would
be. I wouldn't, but...
Yeah. Before Deno is Kabuto?
Well, okay, Hibiki.
No one has...
Hibiki, because Asamu's mom is amazing.
Oh, that's true. She is...
And I love every time she's like making eyes at Hibiki. I'm just like, yeah, you get it, Asamu's mom. You get it.
And then before
before
Hibiki, really no one has a mom that I can think of.
Yeah, no.
Liangle's mom is there. She doesn't really do anything. He never like has a conversation with her. We just see her once or twice, like as he's walking through the house. just, I guess, to establish that both of his parents are alive.
Which, look, that's a rarity in Ryder. It hadn't become a rarity yet. By that point,
no one had parents.
Yeah, no.
But aside from that, I really don't think anyone before Hibiki, there was an active mom. Oh no, wait, Enokita.
Oh right, yeah.
Because Kuga's perfect.
Duh,
because
we talked about that just the other day, just last week. Yeah, Kuga. God dang, Kuga's good. It is just.
But like
good.
Between like from no one there wasn't a mom in Agito, right? No one had a mom.
I don't think so. No, because Osawa was not actually Enokita. They got to just write that part out.
But yeah, so between like I'm not going to count Blade because Mutsuki's mom really wasn't a character. She was just a person that existed. She didn't like he never actually talks to her, so I'm not going to count
it.
Yeah,
no, I think that's legit.
But really like between Kuga and Hibiki there's really not any moms.
Yeah.
And then like from Hibiki to Kiva.
Though it's
there's not really any moms.
It's nice that when we stop and like enumerate them, there are a few more than I thought off the top of my head, and that's nice, but
yeah,
that's also really slim pickings.
Yeah, the thing is they're never like aside from Kiva, again, because it's like Kiva and Double, it's the plot.
Yeah.
That the mom is the main writer's mom. It's always someone else's mom.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, Hibiki comes real close because Osamu is the main character.
Yeah, Osamu is.
In Hibiki,
yeah.
But he's not the writer. So, like, glancing over things quickly, it's kind of easy to forget.
Yeah.
Whereas, and you know, in Sentai, it's never the Red's mom. It's always just there's a mom.
Yeah.
Like, for in those, like, 6 years, it's, like, it's, Mahiro, Swan, well, no, Maja Ranger is,
yeah,
dead,
well,
that is technically the Red's mom.
I didn't realize that was in
but
that
it's also everyone's
genre,
mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, Deka Ranger, Maja Ranger, Bokenger, Silver's mom comes
yeah.
up a couple times.
And she's a cool demon lady.
I love Kay so much. I really do. I would cosplay her if anyone in the world would know who I was. Like, I could show up to a Sentai gathering and I don't think anyone would realize who I was.
They'd be like, hey,
look,
Inuyasha cosplays over there. And
yeah.
You'd just be like, no, you listen here.
And then Geki Ranger, where Miki might as well be Jan's mom sometimes, but it's just she has a daughter. And, you know, that is a big thing in a lot of episodes, so I'm more than ready to count it. But, you know, she's not the Red mom.
Yeah.
So that's really not a thing.
A lot of protagonists just appearing through whatever the masculine version of parthenogenesis would be. It's weird.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And also, lest we get off on another tangent, because
yeah.
we got places to be. Well, you got places to be. So before we get ourselves off on another tangent, I just wanted that my final thing for the future. At some point, I'm guessing we're going to see Bird Kusaka again, but it has been a while.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't even showed up to, like, enigmatically point to the next cube thing that, and then the cube bear turned back from Cube Panda and is just a bear again now, and that's nice, but they got some weird stuff
yeah.
going with the power-ups, is what I'm saying. And also Bird Kusaka.
Yeah.
Like, is Kusaka just busy, I don't know, ruining people's lives? I know that the actor is not actually evil, but he does seem to like playing.
I don't know if he's doing something else, or if, because I mean, he was real important, and then Misao showed
yeah,
up.
Yeah, he was real important, and then he just poof.
Like, then we immediately shifted focus to someone else.
Yeah.
And I'm real confused.
It's weird. But, while we're being confused and wondering what's up with that, we've got questions. So...
A question.
Well, that's true, a question. And the question is, what are our first impressions of Bungley?
I gotta admit, I like him. He's got a personality!
He does.
He's interesting. And, like, that whole shot of him going to, like, eat the camper's food and then the bomb, like, the explosion hits and it just, like, disintegrates in his hand while it otherwise just doesn't affect him at all was actually, like, dang near charming. And a little reminiscent of, like, Marvelous and the Gang in the curry shop in the beginning of Gokaiger. Like, can we just kick Genus and the other two guys out and just have it be him and Naria competing over who can kill the Zoogers first?
Yeah, I am emphatically for this, because, again, I love Naria, And I love this dude. Like, he's in it for the lulls, but in a way that is not as, like, mad, super gross gamer garper as Genesis is. And in a way that could actually be fun, because he's more than just like, hey, weird kooky monster of the week, but instead is, oh yeah, I'm here for the lulls, also I'm going to dredge up the horrors of your past and use them to harm you. Which is another Gokaiger thing, kind of, isn't it? Because, like, the villains...
Little bit, yeah.
The villains are all afraid of the Super Sentai, so memories of the Sentai... Anyway. So yeah, that paired with Narya's superb ability to murder people just as an afterthought while she does what she's just doing anyway. Deadly. So deadly. And I think the evil captain, marvelous! Look, I like saying it that way. I'm the one guy who loves superhero Tyson. I'm that guy. I will defend that. I can't defend that movie. I enjoyed that movie, and I will always say so. But, like, I think that the reading of him as evil Captain Marvelous is right on, because, like, it probably explains why I love him so much, because, like, he is into this without any of Genus's cynical affectation, which, like, isn't actually cynical affectation, but again, like, it's grosser than that, and I kind of applaud them for putting that across in a genre-appropriate way, even as I'm like, ew. But yeah, mostly, like, evil Captain Marvelous is just like, nah, you messed with me, bro. You messed with me. You should not have did,
like,
that.
Like, I want to eat a thing, and also I want to destroy giant stuff. I want to be stronger than big scary things, and that's fun for me.
Yeah.
Whereas Genus is just like, yeah, this is a game we're gonna play for some reason.
Yeah.
Is there a prize? Is there a goal?
It's the thing where, like,
it's mystery.
Where like, this is, it's okay, you know what this is? This is a romantic comedy in a really sick world, because, like, okay, the romantic comedy is always like, okay, well, the girl has to choose between the guy who's right on paper and the guy who's right for her. And, like, Genus is, as a villain, the guy who's right on paper. Like, he's really powerful, he's got infrastructure, he's got a bunch of monsters, he's got a killer instinct, he's kind of a sick sadist. But, like, it's just like, I don't care, dude. I don't care. I want this dude who's just like, I just travel the spaceways looking for really big things to hit and just show them I'm better than them. Okay, what do Sentai always have? Really big robots. It writes itself! Also, again,
yeah,
he's going to dredge up everything you're afraid of and hurt you with it. Like, that! He's not even being sadistic.
And, like, all of their animals are what would be considered big game.
Yes, exactly. Like, he's finally the big game hunter. He's a pirate
and
poacher.
And I think are all also actually illegal to hunt.
Let's see. I don't know. Okay, gorillas, yes. Eagles, I'm pretty sure. At least bald eagles. In the States, lions, tigers, good call.
So, like, he's a poacher.
Yeah, the only one that's not, or are crocodiles, is it illegal to hunt crocodiles? I know wolves are protected in some areas.
I do believe it's illegal to hunt crocodiles.
Okay, well, yeah.
Or I think you're at least, like, not supposed to.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm not sure if it's, like, an arrestable offense, or if it would just be a really big fine.
Still, I mean, like, I had never really thought about that connection until now. Which makes me feel really dumb, because, I mean, it's right there, isn't it?
Sharks?
There's a lot of people who've been trying to stop the hunting of sharks, because it's... Like,
yeah,
their population.
I mean, I definitely know that you shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean,
because the populations are down, and, you know, that's an ecosystem.
Yeah, like, they're very necessary, and people have been hunting them a lot, and because of shark-based horror movies, a lot of people just don't, like, they're okay with just, like, killing them, just because. Not to mention,
yeah,
like, you know, there's various parts of them are delicacies in certain parts of the world, and so on and so on. And
yeah,
so on.
Just, I wasn't sure if that had actually been, like, made illegal.
Yeah, if it's not made illegal,
but again,
then...
like, it's definitely, like, a thing that people frown upon.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, if all of them aren't illegal to hunt, then at the very least, like, I'm pretty sure most of them are on a, most if not all of them are on some kind of protected list or some kind of do not hunt these. Are you stupid? These are necessary to keep the ecosystem in balance. You don't want to know what happens when the ecosystem gets out of balance. What happens? At worst, Kamen Rider Gaim. And then everyone should just be like, okay, right, we're done. Because I had to get it in. I am a terrible person. I am a petty monster.
No, once per episode, we have to dig at Gaiman Drive.
Yeah, look.
That's the calling card of this show.
So then what do you say I take us out?
Yeah. Seems to be all we've got for this week.
Unless you've got any last-minute thoughts?
Hope everyone's looking forward to me crying about moms next week.
I will be here with tissue paper and a warm blanket, even though it's summer. But when a body's crying, blankets, I don't know why they help.
It's true.
But for Laser Knees on the Tor Network, I'm Aleph.
And I'm Sono.
And we'll see you next time.